ESPN College Football Podcast.
Welcome to the College Football Podcast. It is Wednesday, September 29th. Kevin Agande with you alongside Booger McFarland. Booger will join us in a matter of moments to give us his three DEFCON teams. And let me tell you, things are not good for the ACC on Boog's list. And also a couple of teams that Boog would buy stock in. And I was a little surprised that he went with one specific team out of the Big Ten that he's buying a ton of stock. We'll also preview phenomenal matchups featuring Ole Miss and Alabama and why Boog feels pretty good for Lane Kiffin heading into a game like this, as well as Arkansas, Georgia, and the key matchup in that physical confrontation and what's going to stand out for Cincinnati and Notre Dame, especially who has the most pressure in a game like that in South Bend. Before we talk to Booger, there are two things I want to mention. First, 30 for 30 podcast and the Undefeated present the King of Crenshaw. This four-part series examines how Nipsey Hussle's life, death, and legacy impacted the sports world, specifically the NBA. Here, DeMar DeRozan, Isaiah Thomas, DeMarcus Cousins, and others explore the realities of life as a Black man in America, Nipsey's dedication to South LA, and how Nipsey inspired millions. The marathon continues. The King of Crenshaw, listen now on SiriusXM, Pandora, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. Also, listen to Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max on ESPN Radio, Monday through Friday from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Tune in to hear them talk NFL and college football, debate what's happening right now, and grill the best-known guests in sports. That's Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max on ESPN Radio and ESPN News, or listen to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Right now, let's just have some fun with Booger McFarland. It's great to see Booger McFarland. And you know, last week, Booger just showed up in a towel. We're taking steps here. He's got a t-shirt on, Booger. Great to have you here with us on this Wednesday.
Glad to be here.
What do you have on your back? What is that?
This is a back scratcher. So this is one thing that I use all the time. You know, when you're 6'1" and about, about 285 pounds, it's hard to reach all the way behind you. So one of my trusty possessions that I got for a Christmas gift, think about this, like, this is what they get me for Christmas. I buy them iPads. They give me back scratchers. And so I can reach behind me and scratch my own back. So it's a great thing. It's a good gift. It only costs about $2, which kind of shows you what I'm worth around my house.
Here's the thing. It's $2, but you can actually apply it. Sometimes you get gifts where it's just like you spent $50 and you're like, I'm not even going to use this. And for people who are just listening and not looking at the Zoom, it looks just like a long wooden spoon that decided to turn into a fork at the end.
That's it. That's it. Somebody said, you know what? Instead of a spoon, let's just splice the little scooper part and make it a fork and curve it. He can scratch his back with.
Oh, but you get your money's worth. And you know what? That'll transition to this. We are getting our money's worth here this college football season because it feels so wide open. 538 came out where they run this formula with FPI and they look at the playoff race. As we get into October's schedule, there are 21 teams with at least a 5% chance at a playoff spot. Now, I bring that up in late September because it's going to sort itself out in October, November. It just gives you an idea that this feels wide open, especially when you look at the preseason AP top 25 and you look at who was ranked and where they were ranked, where, you know, like Clemson, Iowa State, North Carolina, Wisconsin, Miami, USC, Indiana, Washington, Utah, all already have two losses. You know, and there's only one of them that's still in the top 25, and that's Clemson barely hanging on at 25 right now. And when you look at the history of the playoff, we've never seen a two-loss team make it into the playoff. What do you make of the first month? Because I'm enjoying the parity. Are you enjoying it?
Yeah, Kev, I'm enjoying it. And I think the reason we feel like it's parity is because of some of the results that we've seen on the field. Think about this. We all thought that Alabama was going to steamroll over Florida. They had an opportunity to send that game in the overtime. So I think the team that we thought was invincible was really played down to the wire by a Florida team, which I don't think any of us think are world beaters. Good team, but they're not world beaters. Clemson, they can't score any points to save their life. You look at Oklahoma, Spencer Rattler, yeah, they're undefeated, but they're not looking really good. So the teams or the teams that we thought we could just pencil into the playoff, Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, those teams don't look as dominant. And so I think if you're a team out there, if you're Penn State, if you're a team, even a team with one loss, you got to feel really, really good about where your team is right now. You got to feel really good about, okay, if we can just take care of our business down the stretch, then we'll be in good shape. So I like the parity. I like the fact that we're getting into October and we don't know who the playoff teams are going to be, unlike some other years. So it's a good thing for college football.
You mentioned if you're a team with one loss, that the first team that came to mind is Florida. Like, yeah. You got to feel really good because if you handle your business, deal with Georgia, and if you could beat Georgia, you get to Atlanta and then you get another shot at, we assume, Alabama. But let's slow the brakes down with Alabama right now, because let's get ready for the big showdown versus Lane Kiffin. And you're all smiles here because I Lane brings a certain chuckle to anybody, because we all know he's unconventional. We all know that he doesn't follow any of the norms. And we're expecting a ton of offense. If you look at the history of this series, the last couple of years, ever since Lane has been around, I mean, the over under usually is around the 40s and 50s in college football. When you look at a lot of the games, it is nearly 80. The over under is 79.5. Are you expecting a shootout like we've seen in previous years when Kiffin goes up against Saban?
Yeah, Kev, I think it's going to be a shootout. I don't think Lane's going to score. What did he score last year in Oxford? Like 40, was it 42 they scored?
Yeah. It was definitely in the 40s.
Yeah, so I don't think he'll get that high because I think Nick Saban is going to go into the closet and say, okay, last year Lane was throwing up his clipboard and raising his hands for touchdowns before the play was even over. And so I think Nick's going to take it personal. And although I don't think they can stop the Ole Miss offense, I do think they can limit them. And I think Alabama is going to have a chip on their shoulders, especially coming off the Florida game a couple weeks ago. They're going to want to go out and prove a point that we're not as vulnerable as some people may think they are. And Kev, the bottom line, let's just get right to it. This game will come down to one side of the football, the Ole Miss defense. Because if the Ole Miss defense can show a glimmer of hope to the rest of the team that they can slow Alabama down, and Bryce Young and Chase McClellan and Robinson and all these guys that they have, then they got an opportunity. But if they go out there and Bryce Young is moving the football up and down the field and it's 21-14, at some point, which defense do you think, or would you bet on, that can get a stop? Alabama, not Ole Miss. And so the Ole Miss defense has to prove to the rest of the team that we can play with Alabama. We know Lane can score 40 points. I don't think he'll get that high, but we know the bottom line. They can score points against Alabama. Can the Ole Miss defense make enough plays? That'll be the key to this game.
Once again, the score last year was 63-48. And again, they were going back and forth the first three quarters, but it was just who can make a play on the defensive side to at least hold off and bend, not break.
Yeah.
Yes. Until the offense gets the ball again and then scores again. And it is entertaining. It is also interesting to see Saban being challenged, right? Because with all of Kiffin's faults that in the past, the one thing we know, when the dust is settles, he can flat out coach. He can flat out recruit. Mm-hmm. And that continues to stand out. So I actually enjoy his Twitter feed among any college athlete or coach in America, because it's always entertaining and it's never filtered. And he's just a lot of fun right now.
Yeah, he's a ton of fun, Kevin. Think about this. We always talk about the best play callers in pro football being Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, Sean Payton. When it comes to college football, is there anybody on Lane Kiffin's level? I mean, we'll talk about Lincoln Riley. We'll say Brian Kelly and what they do at Notre Dame. Ryan Day at Ohio State. But is there anybody on Lane Kiffin's level that I think keeps Nick Saban up at night? Because remember, when Nick was trying to innovate his offense the very first time, who did he hire? He hired a guy in which I don't really think he liked, and that was Lane Kiffin. Mm-hmm. Because you knew that Lane was the best guy for the job. And Lane Kiffin took Blake Sims, a former running back, and Blake Sims was almost a 4,000-yard pass. That's how good and creative Lane Kiffin is. So you got arguably the greatest play caller in college football going up against what some would call the GOAT, not only of head coaches, but the GOAT of from a defensive standpoint. He coaches the secondary, so there's another little added layer of a challenge there for Nick Saban. This is going to be fun. And the great thing about it, we don't have to wait till 10 o'clock at night. It's going to be at 3:30 on CBS. So that's the great thing about it.
Yeah, but it'll be a four-hour game.
Maybe four and a half.
Stop the clock pass. And by the way, in this conversation, we could open up. Dan Mullen's a phenomenal play caller as well.
We saw
Saban tested because the final three quarters without an Anthony Richardson, I thought Mullen was brilliant with the play calling. And that to me is the difference. You and I have talked about this and we both agree. We weren't crazy about the 2-point conversion call, but maybe that's the execution of the play.
Correct.
Specifically and Emory Jones holding onto the ball a little bit too long while reading the defense. The opposite of that vibe of a lot of points and let's just throw it. Oh my God, did you see this play? Did you see this trick play? This call will be Cincinnati and Notre Dame. Do you agree in South Bend? Because what we've seen specifically from Notre Dame is grind them out. Eventually we're going to win close games. And the identity of Cincinnati is not to open things up. It's to punch you in the face. As we get ready for this game, I find it fascinating that Cincinnati coming off a bye, favored by 2.5 points in South Bend. How do you think a game like this plays out? What's the one thing you can't wait to watch?
So let's start with the health of Jack Cohn first, you know, because he got banged up against Wisconsin. So let's start and see how that's going to play a factor in this game, whether or not he's going to be able to come out and play. And if he does play to the level that you expect a veteran quarterback to play to. That's number one. Number two, I think we often talk about when, you know, you go against your former team, where there's a defensive coordinator for Notre Dame, Marcus Freeman, going against his old team in Cincinnati. So there's some familiarity with the toughness and the physicality that Coach Luke Fickell wants to play with for Marcus Freeman. Then I think the wild card comes down to really simple. To me, it's Desmond Ridder.
Yep.
What do we expect from Ridder? Because I've seen him so far this year, Kev, in a couple big games. Like, he's throwing the ball up in the air like, hey, I mean, he's throwing Patrick Mahomes no-look passes, except he's looking. But it looks like he's not looking. And so at some point, can Ridder play to the level that he played to in the last season? Because he's not playing to that level right now. Like, Cincinnati is going to take the character and the personality of Luke. We always talk about that. Physical, they're going to be fundamentally sound. They're going to fly around. They're going to do all these different things. But at some point in football, you got to score some points and make some plays. And that falls on the shoulder of Desmond Ridder going against a guy who he's very familiar with, as we talked about, Marcus Freeman. So Ridder is the key to this game. If he plays well, I think Cincinnati wins. If he doesn't, I think Notre Dame will grind him out and eventually take over in the fourth quarter.
The one thing about Notre Dame in their start, all these games are ugly. If it's an ugly game, it favors Notre Dame, right? Because they have found a way. That confidence starts to build in the locker room that, hey, keep it close. Final 6 minutes, we'll find a way, right? It's an intangible you can't measure in a box score. To me, fair or not, there's a narrative here for Cincinnati, right? A year ago, they should have been considered a little bit higher in the playoff. And now you get the opportunity. I'm curious to see how much pressure Desmond Ridder puts on himself, especially in the first quarter. Does he try to do too much? And then they find themselves in a hole making mistakes because he's trying to do too much.
And let me ask you this, Kev. Do you think this is we know it's a big game for Cincinnati. Do we think it's an even bigger game and more pressure for the group of five?
Yes.
Like how do you add that to what Cincinnati and Luke Fickell is dealing with?
Exactly. Good. They're carrying the group of five flag, right? No offense to Fresno State right now, but they are carrying it. Considering
there's a lot of offense. There's a lot of offense to Fresno.
No. Because listen, you know, and I know that while the preseason, and I talked about it at the top of the show, while the preseason rankings mean nothing, they do play a role in where you're ranked on how much you have to move up the line here. And if you're in the top 10 as a power five, I mean, a group of five team at the beginning of the season. That helps you in the conversation with the playoff as you move up slowly, right? And that's what was Cincinnati's issue. So you, last year, you're in the top 10 already to start the season. Yeah. So you have some built in. Fair or not, it doesn't make sense. I get it, people. But that's just the reality of the conversations that we have in November, right? So I think that this carries a group of five heavy weight on their shoulder to kind of, hey, where's the measuring stick? Is this the best chance and the best opportunity? It is the only chance. It's the only opportunity when we come to the playoff outside the Power Five. So I'm curious about that. One other thing that I want to watch too, can Notre Dame get a running game, a consistent running game, not an explosive?
Are they going to block anybody?
Yes.
Like, I mean, Kev, listen, if you watch the Notre Dame offensive line against Wisconsin, I have never seen a unit that didn't communicate as well, or excuse me, as poorly. They didn't look, they almost looked as if they hadn't practiced in a month. Like there was miscommunication. There were guys that weren't coming off the ball. You had Wisconsin guys coming scot-free to the quarterback. Jack Cohn was running for his life. And I don't know if I've ever seen that from a Notre Dame offensive line, let alone one coached by the head coach, Brian Kelly. So to me, that is really, really tough. To your point, you can't run the football if you don't block anyone. Now, here's the catch. Okay, if Cincinnati's going to sell out to stop the run, then are you going to take Tyree? Are you going to take Williams and spread them out and maybe throw some screens, get them involved in the passing game, some checkdowns? Those are your two most explosive players on offense. Yep. So you got to figure out a way to get them the football.
And then where's Mayer fall into the conversation?
Yes.
Is he being utilized underneath, right?
Haven't seen him since, what, week one? Where is he at?
Yeah. Exactly. And this is one of those games where he's going to have to kind of make eight catches and separate himself to keep if they stack the box, to keep them honest, right? The eight-man fronts, right? To make sure, because they're going to put all the pressure they can on the whoever's playing quarterback for Notre Dame. If you have the tight end getting 8 to 10 yard chunks, it keeps those linebackers a little bit deeper in play. All right, another key matchup here, because we question some of the offensive line for Notre Dame. There is no questioning when it comes to the offensive line with Arkansas. And there's a biggest test because they face basically the best front four in all of college, and that is Georgia. The best defense in all of college. KJ Jefferson, Treylon Burks, we will keep an eye. It's Wednesday. There's some optimism about both these guys with Sam Pittman and that offense. As we get ready, I was stunned to see the line at 18.5 in Athens. What's your vibe coming into this game, and what will this one come down to?
So the reason the line is 18.5, Kev, to me, it's really simple. What Arkansas does best is run the football. Okay. That's with KJ Jefferson. That's with that big offensive line. And then they're able to hit some explosive plays with Burks. So my thing is this: Georgia's got the best run defense in America. Georgia got the best defensive tackle in America, Kev. So I think Vegas is saying, okay, are you going to be able to do what you do best against the best? Probably not. So now, can KJ make enough plays throwing the football? Kev, that is, to me, that if Arkansas cannot throw for 200 or more yards, then this game will get ugly. They have to throw the football down the field somehow, some way, because Kirby Smart is going to start at the top of the defense and slowly work his way down. He's going to try to suffocate this Arkansas running game. If you're Sam Pittman, you got to know this. Expect Arkansas to come out throwing the football, okay? Expect them to come out. The easiest down to throw the football on, Kev, is first down. Not third down, first down. So if I'm Sam Pittman, and I know my quarterback is not the greatest passer and my passing game is not the greatest, I got to come up and scheme up some easy throws early on. So I fully expect them to come out throwing the football early, easy screen passes, little check downs. Hopefully Burks can play, get the ball in his hands early. That's the only chance Arkansas has. It's just a bad matchup for Arkansas, I think. As physically tough as they are, as well-coached as they are, they're going against a team that prides themselves on being even tougher and even more physical. And I just think it's a bad matchup for Arkansas.
We talked about this earlier, too, about Nick Saban versus his former assistants. It is interesting. It's Kirby versus, former assistant and Sam Pittman. So they're going to know – they're going to anticipate what each one is doing. I've got to tell you, though, a shout out to Pittman and what they did early on with A&M. They set the tone. There is no doubt that after you get those early scores, you kind of settle down a little bit. A&M just can't score. And so this will come down to, can Georgia's offense do some stuff, right? Like, what are we going to get from Kirby? Is he going to open up the offense? Because he does not like to open up the offense.
I don't know if he has to, though. Like,
yes, he's going to.
Yeah, I mean, but if you're Kirby, you say, okay, on a bad day, like Georgia's given up 23 points in four games, Kev. 23 points in four games. So on a bad day, Kirby's saying, okay, let's just say Arkansas scores 10. I got to believe that we can run the football and play our normal physical style and score more than 10 points. So if I'm Kirby, like, why do you really want to open it up? Like, just like, hey.
Boog, but I will say this. When you look at Georgia and who they play, they're coming off Vandy. And listen, they beat Clemson. And listen, that previous years, that's something you wave the flag and say, yo, we beat Clemson in that offense. You can't say that right now.
Yeah, I get it.
This will be a really, they're not stacked up like Florida. They're not stacked up like Alabama. But this will be a good measuring stick here. I still think they're the best defense in the country to see Georgia's line, that front line up against Arkansas's line, right? And I want to see them challenge, because let me tell you, when you get past that line too, those freaking linebackers, they're all freak shows. They all can run, you know, they're all running 4.4s with the speed that they have on that second level.
Which would be a bigger surprise to you? A, Arkansas able to run the ball against Georgia, or B, Arkansas able to win the game? Which would be a bigger surprise?
Boy, that's a good one. I would say Arkansas to be able to win the game. Because yeah. I don't think they can sustain four quarters of Georgia. And listen, my version of opening up the offense is some explosive plays there with Georgia, because they're starting to get more and more healthy and throwing the deep ball a little bit. This is a team that I think could put up 40 points against a really good physical Arkansas team.
Yeah,
it's just a question of will Kirby allow them to do it and say let's stretch the field instead of grinding it out and pounding and pounding and pounding. You know, I want to see JT Daniels make some throws down the field. Do you think they can? I mean, do you think this team can put up 40 against Arkansas?
Yeah, but it won't be by throwing it, you know, 45 times. I think JT Daniels, we have to remember. So he spent all last year off and on injured. Is the knee healthy? Is it not? So, like, he's just starting to get back into a rhythm of play, practice, rehab, get ready, go back, study film, like getting into a football rhythm. So I think he's going to play better and better throughout the season. So, yeah, I do like JT's ability to throw the football. The key is going to be Georgia's star receiver that's been out. Help me with his name. Is it
Pierce Jackson?
No, Jackson is playing, but the one who was hurt, is it Pickens that was hurt?
Pickens. That's been the big question here. Now, I mean, Bowers is playing really well, the tight end.
Right.
You got Burton. When Pickens is on the field, he's one of those guys, throw it up, he'll find it, right?
Yes, but we haven't seen enough of Pickens in the last 2 years. I know there's some chances of him coming back at some point. Again, to answer your question directly, can they throw it down the field? Yes, but Georgia's issue during Kirby's tenure has been five-star receivers that don't pan out and the ability to get an offense and a quarterback that's going to push the football down the field. So even though we have some weapons now, we're still questioning kind of sort of the same thing. And until they do it consistently, I think you and I both are going to still have that question.
Okay, so last week Pickens was running routes in practice.
Okay.
And he's always been the X factor when he's on the field. Again, he's got Randy Moss like ability and
running routes in practice. I ran some routes the other day too. It doesn't mean I'm going to go out and play receiver for Georgia.
What kind of routes are you running? Come on.
I was at the soccer field. I ran a couple 5-yard outs and I was just, you know, hey,
yeah, we, listen, we need, some, We need video. Joey Galloway's photographers to get video of you running on a field, okay? Because Galloway will make sure that will be documented every time he's got a parachute on. And we will bring that up with Galloway tomorrow on the podcast. Okay, so real quick at the ABC schedule, and I kind of want to transition here specifically about if things are wide open. If you had to buy stock right now in a couple of teams, who would they be at this moment? And it could be buying high right now with Alabama, buying high with Georgia. Who's the team you would buy some stock in?
Penn State.
Yes.
Buying stock in Penn State. Like what Clifford, Kane, the defense, the front four, like what they're doing. Believe it or not, Kev, I'm buying Ole Miss, man. Lane is a full disclosure. Lane is a friend of mine, so maybe I'm a little biased. I just think Lane has the bravado to go into Tuscaloosa, and his team is going to take on the personality of him. And if that's the case, they're going to go in and not be scared. I don't know if they can win, but man, I sure as hell I'm going to watch. I'm buying stock in Ole Miss.
But let's back it up. They're 14.5 point dogs. Are you saying Ole Miss covers? Yeah, because you said I'm not sure if they're going to win. You think Ole Miss covers?
Absolutely.
That?
Yeah. I don't think there's any question. Ole Miss will cover. I don't think this is going to be a blowout. Nick Saban knew this years ago when he talked about playing defense. He said it's too tough to play defense. So you're gonna have to outscore. You got to score people. He was specifically talking about going against coordinators like Lane and Ryan Day and some of the people that have. And then Lincoln Riley, that they have really, really good skill position guys and a quarterback that can throw the football. This is kind of what he was talking about. Who's the other team that I would buy? Here's one. I'm buying Michigan.
Oh, you're buying Michigan. They've done enough for you.
Here's why I'm buying it, Kev, because I think it was Russ Grimm that said it best. He said, well, one of the most satisfying and toughest thing to do is to move a man against his will. And Michigan does that as good or better than anybody in the country. I don't know if it's sustainable, but Kev, it sure as hell is fun to watch, man. When they come off the football and they line up and they run it, it's a physically imposing style. And if we're going to like Arkansas and we're going to like Georgia, then you got to kind of like Michigan too, because they're kind of pounding this thing and doing it the same way. Now, defensively, okay, let's see how they perform when they go up against some of the better teams. But I am buying Michigan. So I'm going to go Michigan, Michigan, Penn State, Ole Miss, teams that I'm buying.
Interesting. I was not ready to hear Michigan. I got to tell you, three teams I would buy right now, and they're actually on our ABC schedule this weekend. And I would buy this team because I think we get it a little relatively cheap. I buy some stock in Texas. Texas got TCU. And they're a different team with Casey Thompson. I know they beat up Texas Tech and did whatever they
Texas
want.
Isn't back. Yeah, Texas they're is not back. Back.
I'm not saying that they're back. But one thing we're seeing with Sark is, hey, I've got Bijan Robinson. I'm going to give Bijan Robinson the football. Good things will happen. And I think buying Texas now is something that I can get cheap. And at the same time, I'd be curious what it's going to be like next weekend against Oklahoma. Because there are a lot of questions. Oklahoma just does not feel right, does not look right. There's something that's just missing with Oklahoma. And that West Virginia game, I think you and I watched that play out. And I don't know what's going on with Spencer Rattler. Maybe he's trying to throw a touchdown pass or try to make the big play on every single play. Yeah. And as a result, things are not coming naturally and moving the football down the field. You know, I'd also buy stock in Oregon. Oregon plays Stanford. I think Oregon, especially when you look at the Pac-12 shaped out, I think Oregon's going to run the table to get in the playoff. And
be careful with Oregon going to the farm. Oregon's headed to the farm this weekend.
I know.
Be very, very careful.
And Stanford's a team you literally have no idea. Stanford's that team where the minute you pick Stanford, they let you down. The minute you pick against Stanford, they bite you, right? And that's what it feels like. It's going back and forth with that. And then the last one, I'm with you with Penn State. I'd buy a lot of stock in Penn State. They've got Indiana on Saturday night on ABC. So those are the three teams to me that I find most curious about. And let's go to the next part because it'll transition perfectly here with whose stock are you selling? And I want to go to your DEF CON teams.
Yes.
This should be really interesting.
Yes. So the first team I want to put on DEF CON alert, Kev, hey, DEF CON 2 for the Clemson Tigers.
DEF CON 2.
Kev, they are ranked 22nd in the country, I think. They have a head coach that's gone from talking about winning national championships and playing anybody anywhere to saying we're just going to get better at some point. And I'm like, okay, this sounds a little different than Dabo. But more importantly, Kev, they have a quarterback in Big Cinco who is only completing 56% of his passes. He was supposed to be the next great one. They can't run the football. Will Shipley's their leading rusher. He's only got 211 yards in four games. So, Kev, this is an offense that, okay, your leading receiver isn't Ross. Your leading running back is only 211 yards, and your quarterback is 56% completion. This is an offense which we're not familiar seeing, and I don't know if it's going to get any better. And so I think Clemson is in a world of trouble, and Dabo knows it. So definitely DEF CON 2 for the Clemson Tigers.
They got Boston College, which is feeling really good. I know Grossell's at quarterback, and they're a different team because they're running the football. This is all about momentum, right? And a lot of this is the mind game because DJ Uiagalelei, we know, has supreme talent.
Yes.
But there is no confidence whatsoever. He holds on to the football way too long. And maybe that's an issue with guys getting open and trying to create the space that we're not seeing in previous years. But the one consistent thing that previous quarterbacks have been able to hide because of their mobility is Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence is you don't have a great line, a great offensive line, and DJ does not move. He does not move like those two guys. And that line is being exposed. There's a lot of like, you know, it's not just one thing you could fix. Cause if it was, I'm sure Dabo would, you know, you and I have talked to enough people that are around the Clemson program that there is some real concern. And when you don't have the quarterback clicking on all cylinders in this offense, it then is, there's a reason why. And that offensive line, and then everybody's affected. And then you don't have Travis Etienne in the backfield to save you. Right. He's not playing with confidence either. Right. I feel like he's carrying the weight of the world. And there's a lot of mental blocks here for DJ at this moment. Would you agree here with what we're seeing from five and how he's processing the game?
Yeah. And some of that's on Dabo and some of that's on Tony Elliott also. So let's not just put it all on the kid. Some of that's on the coaching he's receiving, the play calling that's going in. They have to help the kid, Kev. It's really simple. When you recognize he's not what you've always had, then you have to tailor what he does to fit him. And right now, it looks like Clemson is just calling plays like it's PlayStation 5 and they're on Madden and they're on Hall of Fame mode. And they're just, hey, let's run the quick out. Okay, good. Where's the consistency of tailoring the game plan to what he does? If I were Tony Elliott and I were Dabo, here's what I'd do. I'd go back and watch the Notre Dame game, the first time the kid played. Go back and watch that game and sit down with him and watch that game and ask the tough questions. What were you thinking that night? What was your mindset that night? What did we call that you liked that night? And that's what I would do. If we're not doing that, because the kid that I saw play against Notre Dame that threw for 423, I think, and had the country going, wow, I haven't seen that kid in a while. And so that's what I would do if I were Dabo.
Well, how much is this about pressure that young men put on themselves? And at the same time, the press clippings, NIL, I know I'm throwing a lot at you right now. How much do you think that's playing a role with a guy like Uiagalelei, who's like the face of college football, has got a Dr. Pepper ad, Spencer Rattler, who, you know, who's signing, you know, memorabilia. Like, I love the NIL. I'm all for it. But how much is this about putting too much pressure on themselves coming into a season with the expectations of a Heisman conversation?
Kev, pressure is a privilege. And if you don't look at it that way, then you're in the wrong sport. You're in the wrong sport and you're playing the wrong position because that position comes with pressure. And if you didn't have any pressure, that means whatever you're doing is not meaningful. And so I think ultimately that's the thing you have to look at. So sure, there's pressure, but this is big time college football. if you didn't want to play big time college football, you could go to Temple and nobody would ever confirm.
Oh, see.
I'm just saying, this is big boy football. Like, it's pressure, sure. I mean, it's national television. If you don't want to play in front of hundreds of thousands and play for millions of dollars, then, you know, I mean, you know, go to PA and, you know, play for the Owls. And
you didn't have
I'm just saying.
And this is not isolated specifically to these two guys. CJ Stroud has struggled.
Yes.
If you look around the country, there are Keaton Slovis does not look like he's mm-hmm. You know, he dealt with an injury, but he struggled. Bo Nix was benched. You know, like, these guys are going through stuff that it's not easy, like you said, in a Madden game, just slide in what's your rating and boom, you're good to go. There's a lot of, you know, processy that we're seeing this year that I think a lot of us anticipated we would experience last year because of the pandemic. It's being carried over here. Yep. I just find the whole thing fascinating. And, you know, you could even make the case with our next conversation when it comes to DEFCON, and that is quarterback Graham Mertz. You can make the case with Sam Howell. Like, yes. So let's go to these two other teams. What would you give Wisconsin as your number?
Wisconsin is going to be DEFCON 1.
DEFCON 1.
We talk about seeing a guy. I haven't seen Graham Mertz since, I believe it was Thursday night, over a year ago against Illinois, when he set the country on fire. He threw for 5 touchdown passes that night, and we were like, wow. I haven't seen that guy since. And if you're Wisconsin and teams are just going to gang up and stop your running game and you're not going to run it consistently at all, then where's Wisconsin going to go? Okay, Wisconsin has always played complementary football. They've grinded it out on offense from a physical standpoint. They play really, really tough defense, and they just fundamentally, technically beat you down. Well, I'm not seeing that from Wisconsin. Okay, you talk about a quarterback that's 56% passing the ball in Graham Mertz. So he's even when he's throwing it, he's not accurate. And so I just think Wisconsin's in a whole lot of trouble in a Big Ten where we're talking about teams that have an identity such as Michigan and Penn State and teams that are uber talented, even though they're not playing well, like Ohio State. So Michigan State's playing better. So I just think Wisconsin better look in the mirror. Because if they don't, this will be a season that gets away from them really quick.
And let's not forget about the team that's, you know, playing outstanding football because they've never changed their identity, and that is Iowa, right? Yes. Over the last 2 decades.
Yes.
And you and I watched that game last weekend. One of the things we pointed out is, you know, the way that the game was going out and being played out, Tyler Goodson's going to get stopped here. Spencer Petras has to make some throws, right?
Yes.
And they made some throws. They're not asking him to be Superman. And I think that's very similar to the identity that we've seen from Wisconsin in the past. Quarterback, don't be Superman. We know our identity. We're going to run the football. It's changed here over the last year where it's like Graham Mertz, Graham Mertz, Graham Mertz. And he's forcing the ball in spots that are not there and windows that are not there. And I think it's really hurt the team. Got a phenomenal logo, by the way. Like, when that NIL was announced and he released that logo, I was like, yo, that he's been on this. But yeah. It has not developed anything, and the peak was opening night against Illinois, where you're like, whoa, this is changing things. We haven't seen him be able to duplicate it. All right, or your third DEFCON team. This is
Yes, the third one is North Carolina. This is sound the bell, sound the alarm, alert. It's time to go to war. North Carolina.
DEFCON 1.
Kev. We expected so much out of North Carolina, and I think the expectations have overwhelmed the program, okay? Sam Howell, top 5 pick, allegedly, hasn't played that way. Offensively, they are missing Michael Carter. They are missing De'Ami Brown. They are missing Daz Newsome. They're missing Javonte Williams. Defensively, they're missing Chaz Surratt. They're missing players, and they haven't had the younger guys take the next step up to fill in the void. And you're looking at a team that, regardless of if they are ranked at like the 10th best team in America, when you go in to play another team, when you go in to play Georgia Tech, and I see a number by your name, I'm now going to get hyped because I'm the underdog. And you got to have a certain mindset to handle being the favorite. And I don't know if North Carolina has had that mindset since the season started, going against Virginia Tech, to losing the game against Georgia Tech. Also, they are in trouble because those playmakers, we're four games in, and those playmakers haven't developed a step up yet. So I am really concerned about where this season is going to go for our friend and our confidant, Mac Brown.
It's got to be heartbreaking for Mac as well. We know how much he wants to win, but the ACC is wide open. Like, I mean, you talk about a conference that, you know, you're celebrating.
And they deserve it this year.
Yes. And they deserve it. Wake Forest deserves all the credit in the world. Clawson has done phenomenal. Right. Yeah. And specifically, you know, what they've done and Halfley and what he's done at BC, they deserve a ton of credit. But this thing was wide open for him. Yeah. And after the expectations from a year ago, we know our guy Mac is just kicking himself. Just and let's do a quick thing here too. Let's give a shout out to Jeff Collins, because a week earlier against Clemson, you had the chance to take them down, and he's done a really impressive job on the recruiting circuit of flipping the entire identity of that program in 2.5 years to make sure they're not there yet. Trust me, they've got a couple more years away, but to get wins like that, especially coming off the emotional loss at Clemson, and say, hey, now we've got Notre Dame. I don't want to let down here. Right. So a shout out to Collins as well and what he's done so far.
Well, and for him to take that program from where Paul Johnson had it, where they were running triple option.
Yeah.
And you got linemen in 4-point stances and all that. So you're right. It's going to take another recruiting cycle to continue to get the right type of bodies in there. But for him to hashtag take over the 404 and what they're doing in Atlanta, the recruiting buzz, and it's really all about a culture. Kev, I honestly think coaching is about culture and identity and about teaching. And I think he's doing all three of those, and he's created those down in Atlanta. And guess what? If you can kind of create that in Atlanta, Georgia can't give us so many now.
Yes, exactly.
And there's way more than enough to go around. So why can't we win in Georgia Tech? Why can't we create the buzz that people want to stay in Atlanta? Not only stay in Atlanta, how about come to Atlanta? Mm-hmm. Okay. Welcome to Atlanta. Okay. Ludacris said it a long time ago. Welcome to Atlanta, baby, where the players play. Yep. So I honestly think that if you're Jeff Collins, you're on your way. Now, how do you capitalize? How do you continue to grow and take the next step? Do not rest on your laurels, but I do like where he's at right now.
And you made a great point here specifically that you're in Georgia's, you know, backyard when it comes to recruiting, but there's so much talent in that entire area. I mean, Clemson comes in, Carolina comes in, and I could be Tennessee. That used to be a hotbed for Tennessee. Alabama comes in. There's enough talent where, you know, Georgia Tech can still get, you know, prime, I mean, 4-star guys that come in and change the shape of that identity and that roster from the Atlanta area. And Collins is a player's coach. The same way I think Mac's a player's coach. Like Collins, he has a little swag to him. He likes it. He likes being a part of everything. Yeah. He likes flying on recruiting trips on the helicopter. And, you know, so I think that plays a little bit of role of getting one or two guys and making them flip. Question is, then, can you maintain that in every recruiting cycle? I mean, do you agree when you watch what he does?
Well, what he does is contagious, meaning that if he can get the right two or three guys, then other guys are going to latch on. That's all recruiting is, man, is you got to get the right guys, because that guy will bring his buddy. He'll bring his buddy. And before you know it, you've turned 2 5-stars into 5 5-stars and 6 4-stars. And all of a sudden you have a class that'll rival Alabama, Georgia. That's what Nick Saban did, Kev. When Nick Saban first got to LSU, he signed Andrew Whitworth, Michael Clayton, Marcus Spears, all these guys. The next thing you know, he had the best class. He had like top 5 class in the country. He got every top player in the state of Louisiana. And 2 years later, they won a national championship. So you just got to be able to get the top players. Again, Georgia can't get them all. Okay. They can only sign 25. But if you can get 8 or 10 of those guys in Atlanta, in the Atlanta area, Southwest DeKalb, which is a great program, some of those guys that stay home, I would definitely, if you gave me a fourth team to buy stock in, I would definitely put Georgia Tech on that list.
All right. Before we let you go, I've got to get your thoughts here on your boys under the lights with Auburn coming to town. How are you feeling about this, a game like this, LSU hosting an Auburn team that just survived against Georgia State, needing TJ Finley to pull it out for them in the final minute of the game? How are you feeling about this game? And when I say TJ Finley, last year, a quarterback at LSU.
Yeah, well, I mean, he pulled it out against Georgia State. We hung on against Mississippi State. I think you have two teams, Kev, who are both living under high expectations, that neither one are playing very well up front physically. You have quarterbacks that have expectations in Bo Nix and Max Johnson. I don't know if Bo Nix is going to play. Maybe they go with TJ Finley, which adds another layer to this game. I'll leave it at this. I can simply say this. I learned this a long time ago living in Louisiana. And this is, you know, we have a lot of sayings. And here's a saying that I'm going to leave you with on this Auburn LSU game. It's a poor dog that won't fight in his own backyard, Kev. It's really simple. It's a poor dog that won't fight in his own backyard. If you talk to anybody who owns a dog, all right, and there's another dog that comes in their yard, mm-hmm. they're going to be ready to fight. If they're not, you need to get rid of your dog, all right? So I'll just leave it at that. It's a poor. I expect my guys to fight, Kev, and this will be the first time. Here's something that is probably not going to be talked about because of COVID, because of guys that have not necessarily transferred, but guys that didn't play and graduated. This is the first time in 2 years that we've had an opportunity, or these guys, certain guys on this team, have had an opportunity to feel what Baton Rouge Saturday night feels like.
Mm-hmm. Great point.
Okay, because it like COVID, we didn't have it. So you got to go back to 2020 before we could. Not 20. We got to go back to 2019.
Yeah, and that was the championship team, and many of those guys are gone.
A lot of those guys are gone. So all the guys that are playing now were riding the bench, or either weren't on the team. And so now, Baton Rouge will be rocking. If you're listening to this pod, I don't care what school you go to, do yourself a favor. Tune in at kickoff, because we thought that the whiteout at Penn State was something, and I get it. Everybody wearing white, whoop-de-doo, whatever. All right. But
it's loud. There's energy.
Yeah. Okay. Whatever. The stadium's got a bunch of aluminum, and I think it helps the sound reverberate, but we'll get into that later. Tune in, and it's an unbelievable scene. Now, I just hope my guys can play to the level that carries that on for 2 or 3 hours, and it's a fourth quarter game. And as a guy who is still less than 24 months removed from a national championship, I just want to be able to, hey, just give us a chance to win in the fourth quarter, buddy. That's all I want.
Felt like that you were giving LSU a pep talk there. In the locker room. FaceTime with Eddie O.
I've already done that.
Well, you know, honestly, and it could be, you know, an emotional moment for TJ Finley as well. Like the depth chart is right now wide open. Could be Bo Nix. We don't know how much, you know, how quickly we can see TJ Finley, but like it is all about, you know, making sure you live in the moment, but also you control your emotions out there. I can't wait for it. I think the environment's going to be great on ESPN. So you can flip back and forth watching Penn State and Indiana, and there's going to be a lot of loud fans wearing white at Penn State. Just keep that in mind on ABC. Book.
By the way, the ESPN game, you'll love to know this, that when you tune in, we're going to have Tess and McElroy.
Oh,
in Baton Rouge.
So listen, the Tess effect, that means by midnight, there's going to be a lot of tight. Yes. It's going to be tight. It's going to be tight at the end. Let's just put it that way. Cannot wait. Boog, hey man, have a good week. Of course, we'll see you on ABC Saturday. Appreciate you.
All right. Sounds good, dude. Later.
Big thanks to Boog as he's back on running routes on a soccer field. That'll be interesting. The ESPN College Football Podcast will be back tomorrow with Joey Galloway. We'll be making our Week 5 picks. Also, you know, don't want to leave out our boy Taylor Schwenk, our fantastic producer, who's a Terp, and he's feeling really good heading into Friday night's matchup of undefeated teams against Iowa. The place will be loud. Cannot wait. Taylor, are you feeling good about that game?
Yeah, man, I think, Iowa's offense is kind of trash, Leah Tungavailoa. He's been on fire. He's probably been the best quarterback in college football through 4 weeks. You know, the Maryland defense is feisty enough. We're a little thin at linebacker, but I think we can do enough to win the game, at least cover the point spread. I'm plus four. Yes. Half. Come on. Take
well,
them.
We need this kind of analysis when Joey comes on. All right. Cause I want to hear you bring it with Joey. That'll be great tomorrow. Also, we'll be joined by an ESPN.com reporter to empty the notebook and set the table for all the action over the weekend, as we do every single Thursday. For now, I'm Kevin DeGondi. Enjoy the day. We will talk to you tomorrow.